welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 275 of the podcast, and it is 26th of June 2016 as I record this. So today I have an interview with Grant Faulkner, Executive Director of NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, on how to write 50,000 words in a month and why you'd want to. And we also get into the literary versus genre debate and the poverty versus abundance mindset. And I think you know what side I'm on for most of those types of things. And I think you'll find this useful whether you write fiction or nonfiction. You know, a lot of these tips around getting words on the page apply whatever you're writing. So in publishing news this week, well, you might have noticed that we in the UK had a referendum this week and voted to leave the EU. And thank you for all the emails and tweets. And many of you have asked my opinion and how this will affect authors. So this is not a political show, so I won't go on for too long, but I do have a few thoughts. To go through them quite quickly, hopefully. Yes, I voted Remain, and none of you will be surprised at that because I'm a fan of globalisation and of a united Europe. My family is international. My husband's family and my husband's grandparents were, in the camps originally. So it's, you know, a united Europe is something that's very dear to us. And many other reasons I won't go into. But yes, I did vote Remain. But I also believe in democracy. And as a voter, you are inevitably not always on the winning side, even in such important decisions as this. And as my fellow countrymen, 52% of the UK voted leave. So I have to respect those people. Some of them are my friends. So I'm not going to have a go at people who voted differently to me for other reasons, basically. Of course, the pound is down and the markets have plummeted because of uncertainty. And that is the main thing to keep in mind. This too shall pass, as ever. There will be all kinds of ups and downs in the next few months. We will we already have a big change in political leadership as our Prime Minister resigned. So we'll have a new leader of the Conservative Party, probably of the Labour Party. We may have a general election. We may have independence votes in Scotland, maybe Northern Ireland, especially as I suspect the Republic of Ireland will do very well out of this, as they will be the main English-speaking country in the EU and will attract big business who want to be in the EU in an English-speaking country and now won't be in the UK. We may see other countries leave the EU, but I am ever an optimist. You probably know that for listening to this show as well. I don't believe that 52% of this country want to see everything go down the tubes. So there will be a change and it will be painful, but I don't think, you know, there's a lot of emotional stuff going on right now. And basically, I think we need to try and understand people who voted differently to us. Some of you listening may have voted leave, you know, and I respect that as much as I hope you respect me voting remain. And as writers, I've been thinking about this a lot because I assumed we would remain, like many of those who voted this way. And the main reason is we are increasingly living in echo chambers where we only listen to people who think the same as us. We, you know, if you're on Facebook, you're mainly interacting with people who think the same as you. You're reading, you know, I read The Guardian and, you know, the Financial Times, The Economist, all of which said remain. And I kind of assumed that was what would happen. But as writers, one of the things we must do is write people, write characters who are different to us and have empathy with those we disagree with. And I've written some bad guys in my books. And, you know, one of the most important things when writing, and I'm not saying that those who voted Leave are bad guys. I'm just saying when you write an antagonist and a protagonist, you have to put yourself in someone else's mind, even if they do, you know, take actions you disagree with. So this has actually made me feel like writing and trying to understand through my writing. And I actually think it is as emotional as gun legislation in the US right now. You may well come down one side or the other in that debate, and you might have very dear friends who disagree with you. And, you know, if you believe we should all have an equal vote, if you believe in equality in that way, then you have to respect the point of view of somebody else, even if you violently disagree with it. And I'm pleased that I live in a democratic country. I don't want to be in a country where my vote doesn't count. So I have to believe that that's important for others too. Anyway, so no one knows what will happen. And I think that's a really important point. This has not happened before. Obviously we joined the EU back in the 70s and nobody has left. People have just joined. So no one knows what will happen. But inevitably, there will be lots of moving and shaking. In terms of impact on publishing, and again, this is just my opinion because nobody knows, I think if the Brexit goes forward, which obviously looks like it will, the EU has every reason to make it hard on the UK as they don't want other countries to follow suit. So the people who will, and talking as an entrepreneur, the companies that will suffer the most are those companies and businesses that deal primarily with the EU. So, those who base themselves in the UK in order to access the free market and free movement of people throughout Europe will move elsewhere. And there's already been reports this morning of banks moving to Frankfurt, Madrid, Ireland. I also wonder whether traditional publishing will be hit hard because of this, because it will weaken the European ties. So at the moment, I was reading that, for example, a US author might get a European deal where the UK and Europe rights may be sold, and then the UK publishers would then on-sell to the foreign markets within the foreign language markets within the EU. But this will mean that US publishers and other publishers, Chinese, whatever, will negotiate separate deals. So one deal with the UK and separate deals with a European country, which will inevitably mean less money coming into UK publishing. However, it will also mean that the UK has separate deals. So, and they may be bigger, who knows, because the UK is a big book market. I also wonder whether it will impact some of the 150 imprints under the French company Hachette Livre, which is one of the big five. And, but nobody knows. So we'll start seeing some fallout in the next weeks, months. However, let's talk. So that's traditional publishing. I think there will inevitably be an impact because, you know, all the companies at this point are so embedded in Europe. There will be difficulties in extricating. However, as an indie author, and I'm talking now purely as an entrepreneur, putting all the social issues aside. And just to be clear, I would happily take less money to stay in Europe. But as an entrepreneur, you could say that this decision is positive for UK indie authors in the short term, since a weaker pound means more money when getting US dollar royalties. Again, as I said, I would gladly not have this benefit, but from an entrepreneurial business point of view, it is a reality. A weaker pound means if you get paid in US dollars, you will have more pounds in your pocket at the end of the day. Other people will be suffering, of course, but I'm trying to explain some of the benefits as well as the difficulties. So that is interesting. And many authors who've been saying how much extra they'll be getting because of this. That again will probably be a short-term thing. It may also mean we have a change in the EU digital VAT laws, which came in the end of 2014 and had a big impact on digital sales. If we assume that a post-Brexit UK world is, you know, going to try and attract more business by, for example, lowering corporation tax more and trying to make it easier for companies to do things like digital business, then one would expect that 20% VAT to decrease for the UK, but and potentially we will be out of that VAT moss pain. But we have to also negotiate tax treaties again. So I would say that it's unlikely VAT will go away. I think now it's here, it will be here to stay. But the how that works will probably change. But again, it's going to take ages. It's not like next week things are going to change. It's going to be months. It might be years before things change. So I wouldn't expect any of this to be very quick. The other thing that obviously now the UK will have to negotiate other tax treaties that are separate to the EU. One example would be our treaty with the US. Currently, the 30% withholding tax is waived for UK citizens. I would expect that to continue. And actually, many Brexiters, business Brexiters, including someone like James Dyson, who is one of Britain's sort of billionaire inventors, and yes, I have one of his vacuum cleaners. he said that basically Brexit, and he's pro-Brexit, that the UK will now negotiate much more favourable trade deals with the US and especially non-EU countries like China, India, Japan, as well as Commonwealth countries, which have been shut out of deals due to EU exclusivity. So I think that, and again, no one knows, but if you are a British indie right now, you will be getting more money in your pocket this month because of the weak pound. And if you're selling books on amazon.co.uk from other country, you will get less money with a weaker pound. So if you're a US author selling to the UK, you will get less money when Amazon pays you in US dollars. Whereas if you're in the UK and you get paid in pounds, you're going to get some more money. But I think generally, to be honest, most authors are making a larger chunk of income in the US. And, you know, you might consider focusing your targeting on Canada, Australia in the short term. Although they do say that the hunger for escapist entertainment booms in uncertain times. So the finale of Game of Thrones this weekend will be prescient. And I think, you know, we'll probably see a lot more escapist fiction selling. And of course, a lot of, I think the winners are going to be lawyers in this, as pretty much all the laws have to be renegotiated. So yeah, expect boom time for lawyers. Okay, but let's just, you know, coming back to the basics, in a world of massive change, and I think the same will apply with the Trump versus Hillary election in the US. One, don't take for granted that everyone will vote your way. But two, whatever happens, these things remain true. Keep writing, because more intellectual property assets mean you can remain agile and exploit different paths. So, you know, when you're angry, when you're triumphant, whichever side of the debate you're on, keep writing. I also think going wide, I mean, I know I'm super biased on this these days, especially as today's podcast sponsor is Kobo, but going wide means you do not put all your eggs in one basket. And by going wide, I mean do not rely on one vendor, do not rely on one publisher, do not rely on one country for all your income. And you know, my husband and I sat down this weekend and really looked at the impact on our business of Brexit. And you know, basically we're very agile. We have passports for a number of countries. In fact, both of us have Scottish grandparents, so you never know. We might be moving to Scotland. But, you know, it's a time where if you are wide and you don't have all your eggs in one basket, any decision will only have a small effect because you have these other buffers of income from different sources. So, you know, things are good. For example, what may happen in the American election may also push the American markets up or down, depending on what what people think at the time. And that will have the opposite effect on people in England. You know, we will get less money from the US. You know, the exchange rate will always be fluctuating, and everything will be fluctuating. But if you do, if you are wide and you have income from Canada and Australia, and you have income from other things, you will be okay. Also, be careful what contracts you sign, especially with any terms of license, because again, the change is so is the change coming is just kind of crazy, really. I'd also recommend people read The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly, which I've got here right on my desk at the moment, and practically every I've got it in print because it wasn't in Kindle, but essentially it's about the next 30 years. You know, the changes that are ahead are massive. And if you sign, if you're signing a contract with a publisher for life of copyright, you basically, which is, you know, you're dead before the copyright reverts. Essentially, you know, you can't take advantage of any changes and you're locked in. A lot of companies are going to struggle in the coming changes, whether political, technological, etc. So if you're agile, you will have the chance to make other decisions. If you own the rights to your books, you can make other decisions. So obviously, I understand when people take publishing deals for loads of money. But if it's not a good deal, then consider holding on to those rights. And also check out Christine Catherine Rush's series on contracts at the moment on her site, Chris Writes, KRISWrites.com. And, you know, if you're thinking of signing a contract, super important to know what you're doing. Okay, enough already. I said this would be short and it seems to have gone on a bit long. But this is, you know, it's a big deal, actually. So yes, to sum up, if you're angry, write. If you're celebrating, write. Channel that emotion into creativity. And even though I voted Remain and therefore lost, I'm ever an optimist and I think we will be okay. Humans are resilient and, you know, there are pros and cons in any decision. So I think we'll just make the best of it. Okay, moving on. In writing news, my latest book, The Successful Author Mindset, which talks about abundance, launches this Wednesday, 29th of June. It will be available in ebook, print, and audiobook formats. If you can't get enough of my voice, I narrate it. For print, it is available as a standard book, or also a workbook version with pages to write your answers in. And for audiobook, I'm, as I said, recording that myself and selling it direct from the website. It won't be on ACX because I can't control the pricing. So I'm going to be selling that direct. All the links will be on the blog or also at thecreativepen.com/mindset. I'll also be sharing it by email, Facebook, Twitter, etc. If you're on my email list, you'll get an email. Early readers have said they feel a lot better after reading it. And it's like I read their minds, which essentially means we all do feel the same on this creative journey. So I'm really thrilled it's helping people already. So look for that on Wednesday, 29th of June, 2016. Or if you're listening to this in the future, then yeah, go buy it. Okay, thanks as ever for your emails and tweets. A lot of you tweeted to say you'd seen me and my dad in the Amazon KDP newsletter, which I think was in honor of Father's Day, which was last weekend in Britain. That video was actually recorded over 2 years ago now, but it was a fun day. Some people asked for an update on how my dad's writing is going because he talked about publishing his first book there. Essentially, he only published one book, that historical thriller, but it gave him the courage to pursue his true creative passion, which is visual art. And he's now a prolific printmaker at 65. How old is he? 66, I think. And we did an adult colouring book together this year featuring his artwork. And I'm going to his first exhibition in 40 years. It's been 40 years since he did an exhibition of his art. So I'm very excited. And I hope that encourages anyone listening who thinks it's too late to get started, because it's not. If you want to see what my dad is doing now, go to arthurjpenn.com. Okay, tweets and emails. Thank you so much for these this week. Claire Sager says, so much stuff. So much good stuff in this week's podcast. I'm going back for another listen. That's the one with KM Weiland. Monica Rodriguez catching up on the show. Here's a bit of what kept me away. Sent me some pictures of mountains and what looks like a glacier. Looks like fun. Sasha Black says, listening to your podcast at work, hee hee hee, naughty. And sent a cool webcam picture of her face looking kind of cheeky and also pretending not to listen, which is very cool. Amar Vyas, listening while browsing the website. Thank you, Amar. Marty says, actually sent an email, just a little excerpt from it. I was especially excited to listen to your weekly podcast with KM Weiland. You two are my dynamic duo covering everything for the indie author. Thanks, Marty. I like being dynamic. Joanne McGregor says, listening to your podcast scared the bejeepers out of the good folk in the dairy aisle at the supermarket when I gave a loud bark of laughter at the millionaire lesbian. Someone should totally write that. Daniel Parsons says, listening while sunbathing in New Mexico, a writer never stops, not even when exploring Route 66. Elizabeth O says, listening to the podcast while on a megabus from DC to New York in the middle of a rainstorm. And a hello to Dean Mays, who is convalescing at home after major surgery. And I've been chewing through episodes of the podcast and loving it. Get well soon, Dean. I did actually read your blog post about the, why you're having that surgery. And I do wish you all the best with your recovery. Sarah Rosette, running errands and loved the search string and images for research ideas. Jamie Arpin-Riki said, listening to the show while walking through the University of Winnipeg campus, and sent a picture of a street art grasshopper, which looked very cool. Lots this week, so I'll just pick one more. Victoria Smith, listening to the show while painting the house, getting tons of ideas for post-DIY writing time. Cool. So thanks as ever for your emails, comments, tweets about listening to the show. And I love getting them. So please keep sending them. I am at The Creative Pen on Twitter or joanna@thecreativepen.com on email. I always appreciate the interaction we have on the show. So today's episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and you'll hear a word from our sponsor in a minute. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, and especially to new patron David Goldston. I really appreciate your support on Patreon, like the tweets and emails. It really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And if you do support on Patreon, you get an extra monthly Q&A audio, and you can support for even just $2 a month or as much as you like, just a few dollars per show. And you can find all the details at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, here's Kobo.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Nathan Maharaj, Director of Merchandising for Kobo. As Kobo's head bookseller, I'm thrilled to be working alongside the Kobo Writing Life team as they usher in the new era of digital publishing. One of the most exciting trends I'm seeing today is self-published authors and hybrid authors who are climbing out of the 99-cent price band to offer their work for prices comparable to titles from major publishers. These authors have clearly made investments to make their ebooks the best they can be. From cover design and copy editing to thousands of hours of scribbling away honing their craft. And they're not afraid to ask a competitive but fair price for their work. However you publish, it's a great time to be a writer and an even better time to be a reader. I hope to see you on Kobo soon.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Grant Faulkner. Hi Grant.
Hey, Joanna. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Grant is a novelist and flash fiction writer, the executive director of NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and the co-founder of 100wordstory.org. And today's going to be very cool. But Grant, start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background.
Yeah, I think I was somehow strangely destined to be a writer. I remember like going to bookstores with my parents when I was a kid, and I would just go over and stare at the journals and the pens, you know, and they, you know, they'd lose me but just find me there. And then when I was 20, I decided to be a writer, and there was no looking back. I graduated from college with absolutely no plan B. You know, I was rolling the dice, putting it on the line. And, got my MFA in writing here in San Francisco and pursued, you know, sort of the traditional course, you know, learning how to write a short story, then graduating to a novel. It's so strange for me to say this because nowadays with NaNoWriMo, I meet like 18-year-olds who've not only written 5 or 6 novels, they've also published them. So I feel like I was moving at a glacial pace as a writer in the pre-NaNoWriMo days. But yeah, you know, I've always been dedicated to fiction writing. Eventually, I had to come up with a plan B and earn a living somewhere there in my late 20s. And so I taught writing at the community college level and the college level. I worked in journalism. I worked in corporate communications. And then fortunately, I found my professional home with the National Writing Project several years ago. And that National Writing Project is dedicated to helping teachers teach writing better. And that led me to National Novel Writing Month, which is just down the street. I met Chris Beatty and asked him, you know, if I could get involved and volunteer because I thought it was such an amazing organization, especially after the first time I did it. I did NaNoWriMo partly because I was stuck in a rut as a writer. I felt like I was just repeating all my old habits. And I was like, who decided on this? Did I decide on my creative writing process or did it decide on me? And so NaNoWriMo was a fantastic way to kind of experiment. And by doing it, I found all these other, you know, other creative possibilities that weren't available to me beforehand. So yeah, you know, the thing with writing is one thing just kind of leads into another in this way you can't sometimes explain. So somewhere in there as a parent, a busy working parent, I started writing shorter and shorter stuff as well. And that's what led me to 100-word story. And there was no website on the internet that featured 100-word stories, exactly 100 words. So I figured, why not start one?
No, absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. So I guess for anyone who might not know, what is NaNoWriMo? And, you know, let's tell people a bit more about NaNoWriMo, how it got started, what is it, how's it changed over the years?
Yeah, it's funny because so many people do NaNoWriMo, I always just expect they know what it is. And then when you ask a question like that, I'm like, no, not everyone in the world knows what NaNoWriMo is. But most writers do in some sense now. To give you some history, it started kind of unofficially in 1999. I mean, unofficially meaning not as a nonprofit or a movement. The founder, Chris Beatty, basically woke up one day and said, I want to write a novel. How do you go about this? And instead of buying a lot of how to write novel books or signing up for a writer's workshop or going to an MFA program, he looked at his bookshelf and picked out one of the more slender novels or several of them, you know, think like Catcher in the Rye. And he tallied up the words to be 50,000 words. And he thought that was doable in a month. And so he invited, Chris is a very, social guy. So he invited 20 people to join him. And they met after work in Berkeley's cafes and wrote together. And this started, you know, really, it's interesting to me because that basic framework of writing with other people really defines who we are today, too, even though we had nearly 500,000 people sign up for all of our programs last year. So those 20 people, they met in cafes and that helped them be accountable, you know, because if somebody didn't show up, Chris or one of his other friends would call him up and say, where were you today? You know, so they had to be accountable and show up or they would feel like, you know, that there's that thing. Like if you want to create a new habit, the best way to do it is to announce it to your friends because they'll hold you accountable. Mm-hmm. And then they did this interesting thing where they would challenge each other. You know, so they would competitively say, okay, we're going to write for 10 minutes and whoever, you know, writes the most words will win a latte. You know, and so we do that today. We have word sprints that are on Twitter, you know, going 24 hours a day during NaNoWriMo. And in our live write-ins, which with municipal liaisons host, we have 1,000 volunteers around the world who host live writing gatherings. They do things like this too. So it's a way to motivate people and keep the writing moving forward. And then they did this other thing too. They would, do a test. They'd say you have to write 1,000 words before, you know, or 500 words, whatever it is, before you can go to the bathroom. And this day, especially those people who won the latte in the first exercise, that's, you know, it's one of the most motivating things for any writer to do. So if you're having problem moving your novel forward, give yourself a challenge like that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I do credit NaNoWriMo. 2009, I did NaNoWriMo. Right. I made, I think, 27,000 words I managed.
But, fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Because the aim is 50,000, right? But, right. You know, I did 27,000 of, and I'd never written, you know, fiction since high school. And the kernel of that 27,000 words, like that whole 27,000 words didn't make it into the novel, but the story that I came up with is what became Stone of Fire, which was my first novel.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, a couple of years later, and now I've got like 11. So it's kind of the start, but I wonder if you could talk about why do you think that putting a deadline and a limit around these things helps people to write? How does that actually work?
Yeah, I mean, we have this saying that a goal and a deadline are creative midwives, you know, and I think so many writers, you know, I mean, I, for instance, when I first was setting out to write a novel, I'm one of these writers who will write a first chapter or maybe two chapters, and I will endlessly go back and keep rewriting that and keep thinking I have to get it perfect before moving on, you know, and so that beginning part of the novel can get so much attention. Like I always say, even if I do finish a novel, it's like 60% of my attention is on the beginning, you know, maybe 25% on the middle, and then just a scant little bit at the end, you know? And so I think like NaNoWriMo, by having that deadline, it really gives you an urgency. I think otherwise I think people can kind of dally through their novel for years and think that they're really working hard on it. But you know, if you really tally up the time, it's not moving forward. And so NaNoWriMo is all about that moving forward. And as you said earlier, so many of those words you write, they don't end up in your final draft, and they're not really supposed to. I mean, writing a rough draft is largely this imaginative exercise. You're exploring worlds, you're taking risks. And so to write 50,000 words in a month and only 30 days, it puts that pressure on you. You know, you have to keep moving things forward. And that I think there's a great creative principle there, because you're less attached to your words. They're less precious. And so you just write and get it out, and then you know you're going to rewrite later. But you're going to explore the story in interesting ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think is it 1667 per day?
If you want to be precise, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So I was around 1700.
Yeah, so say 17... Yeah, exactly. So 1700 a day, you bulk it up at the weekend and kind of, you know, see what happens. Yeah. So what are your tips for people, you know, like you mentioned, you're a busy parent, you know, what are your tips for writers to actually get that number of words done per day?
Yeah. Well, the most, when I talk about NaNoWriMo to people and tell them about it, the number one thing that people tell me is, oh, I'm too busy for that, you know. But the thing is that NaNoWriMo is designed for busy people, you know. Every single person on the planet thinks they're busy, you know. Even people who don't work, who have lavish incomes, they think they're busy, you know, no matter what they're doing. And so we all have to like kind of reckon with that. You know, NaNoWriMo teaches us time management, which is one of these crucial skills for writing novels that is vastly underrated and not talked about. So, I mean, I think the first thing is like, I always tell people to go on a time hunt, you know, beforehand, like in October. Like literally keep track of how you spend time for an entire week, you know, every 15 minutes or half an hour, whether, you know, tally how much time you spend on Facebook or Twitter, tally how much time you spend on Netflix, tally how much time you spend, you know, during lunch at work. And what I find is that people find all of these nooks and crannies of time that are sort of like not used for any great creative purpose. Mm-hmm. And so for 1 month, you can think about, well, maybe I don't go on social media for a month. Maybe I say no to going out on Friday nights for a month. You know, you carve out time so that you can make it possible to write a novel. And I think we all, you know, it's not a judgment, but we all sort of allow our lives, you know, a lot of things feel urgent and necessary, but if we really think about them, a lot of them aren't urgent and necessary. Mm-hmm. And writing a novel is urgent and necessary. So it's about, you know, we have a saying too, like if you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I was also thinking that when I did NaNoWriMo, preparing in advance so that you can start writing on day one was a really big deal. So how do you suggest people prepare for NaNoWriMo?
Well, we're not prescriptive. We like NaNoWriMo is a wide open creative experiment, and it's been interesting to watch the variety of ways that people approach it every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always think, like you said, it's good to be prepared, you know, and you have to figure out what the right level of preparation is for you, you know. So we always have this kind of active debate among our participants. They are the planners who really need to have that plot really precisely outlined, you know, and deeply thought through. And that works great for some people. It happens not to work great for a lot of people. Like I have to not know where my story is going literally from the beginning, because writing a rough draft is an exploration for me. I'm trying to find the story in the words. And so the other camp are the pantsers, you know? And so we'll have people like literally hands on the keyboard, you know, midnight on October 31st, ready to go. And sometimes they don't even know what they're going to write, you know? And so those are the two, the spectrum there. I think generally, like, the people who are successful are somewhere in the middle. I think I always say that it's good to let your ideas marinate in October, to take some notes, to think about who your characters are, to kind of like just start letting things like flow through your brain and having ideas percolate. And then I think for me, this is how I do it. Then I'm ready to go on November 1st, but I'm not like cornered by an outline. You know, I can go in any direction.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I mean, like, I didn't have, when I did it then, and still my process now, I don't have an outline, but I do know who my characters are. I do know what the first scene is going to be. And I think that's a big deal. What you don't want on that first day is the blank page and no idea. Like, if you're someone who's, you know, if this is the first time, the blank page can be quite bad. But if you know, like, this person is in this place and they're going to do this, that's kind of, I guess, what you need to know, isn't it, on day one?
Yeah. I think just getting started our advice is really pretty simple. Part of it is banish your inner editor, you know, and so that's the way, like, the gusts of inspiration are only going to take you so far. So that first day of NaNoWriMo, you might be feeling like this, you know, the wind's just blowing you forward, you know, but that inspiration is going to fade out pretty quickly. And so then you have to I think one thing when you're talking about tips is you have to account for those days that you just don't want to write, you know, but I think this is how you learn to be a writer. Mm-hmm. Those days you don't want to write, you still show up. It's like, I always say that NaNoWriMo is one part boot camp, one part party, you know. You are, the boot camp part is you're training yourself to be a writer, you're training yourself to show up every day and be creative even on bad days, but you know, we also have like celebratory aspects, and we make writing a novel fun also, so
absolutely. And I mean, one of the things is the sharing aspect of word counts, which, you know, for, again, some people, I mean, I must say, because I only made that first year 20,667 or whatever it was in 1 month, I was feeling like, oh my goodness, all these people are, you know, so far ahead of me. And that public sharing was quite difficult. So why is the public sharing of word counts so emphasized and so important?
You know, I think it's emphasized. It's just so natural. It is almost like a greeting. You know, when I see NaNoWriMo, people see each other, their first question, other than how are you doing, and it might even be before how are you doing, it's like, what's your word count? It's a point of curiosity. I think like NaNoWriMo has, you know, we are fundamentally an organization of encouragement and empowerment, and I think that's a big part of it. So however that takes its form, like when you kept saying, I only wrote 27,000 words, and you felt, I don't know, you were envious or you felt shamed by the people who had written more, you know, so I think the word count can be motivating on a lot of different levels. I would never say that you only wrote 27,000 words. I'd say that's tremendous. And if you write 27,000 words in November, that's something like 300,000 words a year, which is amazing. So I think it has that play. It's just like a discussion. And I think you can be really motivated by those people who are ahead of you. Sometimes they will, you know, if somebody like writes all day Saturday and catches up and goes beyond their word count target, you know, that's really motivating, because you're like, if they can do it, I can do it too. And we have all of these NaNoWriMo heroic stories, like people, you know, have signed up on November 15th, you know, and they
One guy who did like it in a day or something?
There are people who do it in a day. I don't understand how they physically or mentally do it, but they can. you know? And so it's interesting. And when I say that NaNoWriMo is a creative experiment, I think that's part of it. You know, you're figuring out even your own, like not only when you like to write or your own writing habits or what boundaries you can push, but your pace as a writer. Like I happen to be like a very slow writer. And in some ways, that's why NaNoWriMo really helps me. I happen to be a writer who hates writing rough drafts. And again, NaNoWriMo really helps me with that.
Mm.
So yeah. So the word count, you know,
How can you
not talk about your word count in November, essentially?
Yeah.
It's like on your mind because you've got to hit 50,000 words.
Yeah, and I think it's become, certainly in the genre fiction space, it's very normal to share your word count in general. And I will often these days share my word count on Twitter or with my readers, you know, when I'm getting closer to a number. So I think that's become more normal. But I'm interested with you as, you know, coming from a MFA sort of literary tradition. And one of the biggest sort of criticisms of NaNoWriMo is, oh, this is just getting all these random people to put out books in a month. So, you know, what do you say to people who criticize NaNo over that?
Well, that's it's really too bad that people criticize it on that level, you know, because, you know, we are about energizing people to be creative, to realizing their creative potential. That's why we exist, you know? Like, I would never tell people they shouldn't dance on Friday nights because we have too many people dancing in the world already, or we already have professional dancers, you know? And I think writing a novel serves that purpose, you know? It's like people, a lot of people come to NaNoWriMo and they don't necessarily, they're not writing to get published, you know? I think a lot of people make that assumption that it's all about everyone's going for the bestseller. But so many of our people gather just because they like being creative and writing with other people. You know, they like to explore their imagination in that way. And we you know, our mantra is that everyone has a story to tell and that everyone's story matters. And so there's so many different levels of meaning that happen when you write a story, whether you want to be a bestseller or just want to write. And so I think everyone in the world should write a novel. I don't think we can have enough novels in the world. I don't think we can have enough dancers in the world. I don't think we have enough improv actors in the world. You know, like these are things that are being creative is a primary way of being a human being. You know, so when I hear those critiques, I find them really dispiriting and unnecessary. And I don't think they understand NaNoWriMo either. Like we're not telling people to try to publish their rough draft. You know, we're trying to ignite their creativity.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I'm saying the people who say this at the moment as well, criticizing self-publishing, you know, taking it a bit further. I say for every person who wants to write a novel and actually starts writing, the number of books they buy goes up.
Exactly.
So if every person wrote a novel, everyone would buy more books and that makes everyone happy.
Exactly. And I always say, you know, like I won't name the grantor, but they sometimes say that we're not really furthering literary excellence. Mm. And my comeback is like 500,000 people writing novels is like, I can't think of a better way to further literary excellence. You know, those people go back and they're better parents as a result. They're better students. They're better managers. They're better employees. You know, being creative, like when you have that in your life, you change the world in important ways.
Yeah. And, you know, as I said, for me, I went from someone who said, and I think the timing of this interview is great because we're quite early for November, but yeah. It was on a podcast in July 2009 when someone said to me, why don't you do NaNoWriMo? What, you know, because I said, oh, I could never write fiction. And so doing it that year basically changed my life. So,
yeah.
But I had to think about it. Like, I got the idea in July. Oh, I could do that. I'd never heard of that before. And then by the time November came, I was like raring to go. So, I want to encourage people listening now that what you've said, this is just about creativity and you don't know what's going to come out of it. You know, you don't know what's going to happen with what you come up with.
You can do it. And that's the key thing. What you said is that I can do it. You know, that's why we try to foster. You don't have to be one of these wizened writers with an MFA. You don't have to do that. You know, I mean, actually, like an MFA, I don't think it really furthers learning how to write a novel that much, because I think the best way to learn to write a novel is just like what Chris thought in 1999, is by doing it.
Mm.
And every novel you write is different than the previous novel. Every novel has its own learning curve. And the only way to do that, I mean, you know, there's that popular concept that to gain mastery in anything, you have to do it for 10,000 hours. Well, what better way to start that than in NaNoWriMo, which is basically a training ground to show up every day and write and to reach those 10,000 hours. Mm. So you got a story, you can do it. Doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, and I love that. It is a very encouraging organization. And just coming back on the social thing, because that's the other thing. I remember, again, you know, back in 2009, I'd only been running my website for 6 months. I didn't know any authors. I'd started to interview people on my very early podcast in order to actually meet some people. But NaNoWriMo has a very big social aspect. So if people listening don't have any author friends, how is NaNoWriMo so social? What are the things that go on?
You know, I think people have a notion of authors as these solitary, angst-filled creatures. and there's some truth to that, obviously. But, you know, I think when I said that the time management skills are an underrated part of being a successful novelist or writing, so are the communities. You know, like if you look at every writer that you've read, I bet if you really look at their lives, they have a community of authors or creators who have helped them along their way. And so having a community is really important to what we do. And so many people find their writing community, their writing home with us. Mm-hmm. And so our forums, for instance, like online on the NaNoWriMo.org website, we get 1 million comments during the month of November. You know, they're very active. And literally, you can talk about every subject under the sun with creativity and writing. You can find people, if you ask a question, you will get answers right away. But then, you know, like social media explodes. So Twitter, our hashtag NaNoWriMo is like trending throughout the month of November. And as I said earlier, like these word sprints where there's a Nano word sprints account. And, you know, so these sprints, these challenges happen around the clock during November, and it's very social. And just like you said earlier, people will write to the prompt. They'll share their word count. They'll share a sentence. So it's all about bringing people together creatively. But beyond online, we do have these 1,000 municipal liaisons I mentioned, who are around the world, literally. Mm. Like they're you know, in the U.S. of course, but they're, you know, we have Pakistan and countries in Africa, and we've had people right in Antarctica before, you know. So people like and you know, like I think like per like when I was saying that Chris when he like met with his friends in coffee shops, like that's what the municipal liaisons do. They bring people together. Mm-hmm. People feel encouraged and empowered to write when they meet other writers who are at the same level as they are, and it's motivating to show up and to have, you know, to write with other people. They've even done these studies that people feel more creative when they're even sitting next to strangers in cafes. So yeah, we feel that the community takes a village to write a novel.
Yeah, and I should say, as from my experience of doing that, because I still write in cafes a lot, and I dictate as well, and I do. But when I tried this social writing, I think it's important for people to understand that when you go to a NaNoWriMo writing session, you go to, say, a cafe, but you actually sit there and write. It's not like a writer's group or like a book group where mostly people just chat. Actually, you go and everyone's quiet and they're writing. And then after, say, the hour is up, then you can chat, right? It is quite a controlled thing.
Yeah, they're all different. Some of them, I mean, I think mainly, you're right, most of them you are sitting there writing, and you can almost feel like you're in a library. And then some of them are more active. But yeah, a lot of people, you know, again, like in these writing groups in November, a lot of them continue on and they meet year round, you know, so it's a great way, as you said, when you started this podcast, to meet other writers. I think it's so valuable to know and interact with other writers, whether you're sharing your stories with them or just, like, you know, understanding each other. You know, like writers, when you say I am a writer to a lot of people, oftentimes you strangely don't get a lot of support for that. You know, they say, how are you making a living, or have you published yet, or, you know, or they say, oh,
yeah.
Which is the worst response. But, you know, so people, you know, I think like having other writers that understand what you're going through is really important, and, you know, can creatively support you in a variety of ways. And I forgot to mention, we have a library program called Come Right In. And so 1,000 libraries also host these writing gatherings. So, you know, there are a variety of ways to connect with other writers.
That's awesome. I might have to start something in Bath, or I might see if there's already something in Bath.
Good.
Yeah, because that would be fun. But so NaNo is really about first draft writing, as you said. It's about getting the words down. It's about not editing it. It's just about doing it. It's not right. about zero to publish novel. I know some people do talk about zero to publish novel in 30 days. And it can be done, but I think when you are more developed as an author. So what do you recommend people do at the end of November? Say they have 30,000 words or 50,000 words. What do they do then after November?
Yeah, well, it depends on where they are in terms of their novel. We hope that they've at least, you know, we always say right to the end. It's good to finish it, even if you have to be sketchy in some of the scenes leading up to that. And it depends on what their ambitions are for their novel. But we offer a program called I Wrote a Novel, Now What? And it's in January and February. And it's basically a large conversation about that now what, you know. So we provide resources on our blog. We have tweet chats with authors, editors, and agents. We host webcasts, you know, sometimes with self-publishing companies, just a whole, we try to cover the spectrum essentially on what the next steps are. So we talk about revision. We talk about finding your writing community or forming a writing group. We talk about how to find an agent. We talk about all those different publishing pathways that are available to people. So it's largely just like educating people and trying to help them with those next steps. Yeah.
Yeah. And as you're talking, I realize we haven't actually said that NaNoWriMo is free.
It is free, yes. That's why we say everyone has a story to tell and everyone's story matters. We're not going to charge them $10.
Yeah, this is the thing. I know we've been talking about it for ages and I'm like, actually, just everyone knows this is a free program and you just register and join in, right?
Yep, everyone can do it. And, you know, we're a nonprofit, so we do have to like ask for donations. Mm. To make it all happen, you know, I mean, it takes a lot of people think we're just a website, but being just a website for 500,000 people actually takes a lot of work and money. Yeah, and we're not just a website. Like I said, we've got these 1,000 volunteers and libraries, and we also have a young writers program where we have 100,000 teens sign up on the YWP, that's what we call it, website to write novels just like they do with NaNoWriMo. And we send free classroom materials to 2,000 classrooms every year. And when I say free, they're free, and we pay shipping and handling to do that. You know, so we really are. We're all about access to creativity, and we do that as you know, keep costs down as much as we can.
Mm. And we're not going to talk about merchandise or anything, but I, you know, as someone who participates, I, you know, when you're participating, you do feel like buying the t-shirt and donating to the program because you're part of it. But I just wanted to make sure people understood that they can join in. Just like that. But you mentioned the Young Writers Program there, which I often refer people to. Just tell us a bit more about that in case people have kids or friends or, you know, people.
Yeah, you know, it operates largely like NaNoWriMo, except that because we're dealing with like younger kids, they don't have to write 50,000 words in a month. They can set their own word count goal. Like my daughter, who's in fifth grade, wrote 10,000 words last year. And so you can do it independently. Any teen can just sign up on the website and do it. And we're actually building a fantastic new website that we hope to launch this year. And then some of our biggest successes I think happen in the classroom. And so teachers have access to free workbooks. We have this fantastic curriculum designed specifically for teaching novel writing, and it's not just in the month of November. Mm. It covers the whole school year, so it helps teachers teach kids how to prepare to write a novel in November, revise it, work with other people. And then in the end, like we usually work with a self-publishing company so that all the kids get a free copy of their novel, you know, which is fantastic because they're writing for an audience and they have to have a novel in your hand no matter what age you are. It's always exciting. Mm. And so, you know, oftentimes those schools host readings. I'm actually going to a reading this Friday. And what we find, you know, the Young Writers Program, we hear so many stories about kids who are the most reluctant writers, the kids who hate writing or special needs kids, and they will do NaNoWriMo and have this huge breakthrough. They'll suddenly love writing. And it's always like, how do you explain that? Mm. And I think it's because, like, you know, we learn through our passions, right? That's the best way to learn anything. And instead of kids sitting there in the classroom and feeling that red pen that's going to, you know, correct their grammar, that's important. But it's also important to learn that writing is like a fun, joyous, amazing experience. And so I think we give kids agency. They get to choose their topic. They get to dive in. They get to, like, you know, the kids love that word count goal. You know, they love tracking that and tracking it with their classmates. And then once they do this, they write a novel at such a young age, I think they're just so empowered and confident about writing in a way that other, you know, projects can't really achieve that. Writing a research paper, 10-page research paper is easy.
Yeah, that's true. And I do think that that initial reticence, that's what I think I had as well, which is because school teaches you that you have to write something literary. You know, you have to write something like Thomas Hardy or John Steinbeck or whatever. But actually, what if you want to write about aliens and spaceships, or like I do, like blowing stuff up and killing people, and all that stuff's just not acceptable when you do English literature at school. And I think, you know, something like NaNoWriMo for kids and for adults, it's like you're allowed to write whatever you want. It doesn't have to be, you know, literature. In fact, it probably isn't.
We don't work within those boundaries, you know. I mean, all writing, I we would never set up boundaries like that. We want people to be creative in all the, you know, you can be creative in so many different ways. So we don't judge quality, you know. I mean, quality happens when you do it and you practice, and you know that happens across genres. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, so one more thing on NaNo before I ask you just one more question about your own writing. Camp NaNo is coming up too. So what is that? I wanted to work that in
because when you were saying that there's still time to think about doing NaNoWriMo this November, well, there is this fantastic way to warm up to NaNoWriMo, and that's in Camp NaNoWriMo. So Camp NaNoWriMo isn't like a physical camp, you know. We don't have cabins somewhere in Northern California where people are gathering. It's an online event, campnanowrimo.org. And we designed it initially for people who couldn't do NaNoWriMo in November. So there's a session in April and there's a session in July. And it's basically just like NaNoWriMo, except it's a more open-ended and casual version. So people can, you don't have to write a novel, for instance. You can write a memoir. You can write a script. You can write a play. You can write an epic poem. Mm-hmm. You can revise your novel. And so you set your own word count. You can also set your own word count goal. So it could be, you know, 500 words or 50,000 words or 100,000 words. And so it's much more, you know, open in that sense. But I do think it's a great warm-up for NaNoWriMo. And so we have this session in July, and about 30,000 people will participate in July. And online, we don't have the municipal liaisons hosting live writing events in the summer, but you can form a cabin with your peers. So for instance, I will be in a cabin with 10 fellow writers, and that swapping word count and writing tips happens within that cabin. So it's a more kind of intimate conversation. It's a great way to warm up and get ready and just kind of dip your toe into NaNoWriMo if you're thinking about it and haven't done it before.
Fantastic. And then I also wanted to ask you, we've been talking about 50,000 words, but you have 100wordstory.org. And so how can you write a story in 100 words?
Yeah. I always say I'm a very schizophrenic writer. I like to write long and I like to write short. I really don't like there to be any boundaries. I think people, sometimes writers put too many boundaries around themselves. Like, I only write sci-fi or I only write literary fiction. I mean, I think breaking down those boundaries makes you a better writer. And so 100 words, it is a really interesting challenge. Like, when I first started doing it, it was really random. I read a friend of mine's stories. He'd written 100 word stories as a memoir, which I thought was really interesting. Because when I think about my life, it's not like with this, you know, this this grand trajectory of a plot. It's more these little snapshots, these little moments that are important. It's like a collage. And so I think 100 word stories are perfect for capturing those little moments that are very telling in our lives, but maybe don't warrant like a novel or even like a conventional short story. But that said, like when I first started doing it, I would write maybe 150 or 170 words. And I was thinking, this is as short as I can go. And I told this friend of mine, I was like, you know, more or less, it's close enough. And he was like, no, you've got to get it down to 100 words. There's no like fibbing. There's no wiggle room there. It's exactly 100. And so I did it. I kept working. And it's really interesting what happens when you write for concision like that. You know, it really, you can develop a story arc in 100 words. You can have character change. It takes a lot of practice to do it, but it's a really interesting exercise. And I think like writing short like that is a really, it informed, it's improved my writing in a way that no other form has. because it teaches you that you can write a story through hints. You can leave things out. Like, that's the thing. If you write a story in 100 words, it's not about what you include in those 100 words. It's largely about what you leave out, what the reader senses and fills in with themselves. It's informed my novel writing. It helps me write with suspense. I leave more things out of the story and see if I can carry it off.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. I've written short stories. I'm just writing a short story right now, and I've just written a screenplay, and I'm like 100 words. I mean, it's so it only has one character in one scene.
No, not necessarily.
Does it have dialogue or?
It can have dialogue. You know, they've been written in so many different ways. I mean, I read every month, we get like 300 submissions. So I've read thousands of them, and people take a whole, you know, sometimes it can be only dialogue. They can almost be like slices of life. They can be like prose poems, but they can also be more narrative and more like stories, you know?
Mm. So, and people can find those at 100wordstory.org.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Think of them like if a haiku is like the shortest style of poem, you know, I mean, think of a 100-word story as being like the haiku of storytelling.
Mm. Yeah, and what about your novels?
Yeah, I just sent a novel to my agent. I have high hopes that it'll be published. You never know. So every year I write a novel in NaNoWriMo. I would say I get maybe like at most two good ideas a year. This is my slow writing, I think, but I always get like one. And so it's a good pace for me, because I'd be very frustrated if I was just sitting around with 10 novels that hadn't been written. And so now I have four or five that I've written during NaNoWriMo that are in a drawer, you know? And so now that I sent off this one novel, which I wrote in NaNoWriMo just 2 years ago, I'll open the drawer and get the next one out and start revising it soon. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. That's so good. It's always lovely to, you know, you obviously love your job as well as what your job is about, which is really lovely. Okay. So tell us, where can people find you and NaNoWriMo and all this stuff online?
Yeah. So NaNoWriMo is NaNoWriMo.org. You can find everything through NaNoWriMo.org. We have links to here. I'm going to pull it up just because I always forget URLs. But so NaNoWriMo.org and Camp. Let me get the exact URL. Just double check here. But I always just click on things. So the Young Writers Program is ywp.nanowrimo.org. And you can also just search for these things, obviously. And then Camp NaNoWriMo is campnanowrimo.org. And then me, I'm at grantfaulkner.com. You can just search Grant Faulkner on Google. You'll stumble across me somewhere in there. I'm on Twitter at Grant Faulkner. Facebook, there are only about 5 Grant Faulkners in the world.
So, who are writing.
So,
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Grant. That was great.
Absolutely. Thank you. This was so fun.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.